Hello, everybody, and welcome back to SoulSpeak. I'm your host and founder, Sheldon Piznat. And in this call, in this session today, we're going to be talking with Sridhar Silberfine. We're talking about meditation, yoga, spiritual practice, balancing spirituality and worldly pursuits, and much, much more. Sridhar Silberfine is a sought-after spiritual teacher and longtime practitioner of yoga and meditation. He founded Bhakti Fest in 2009 and the Center for Spiritual Studies in 1973 in order to spread spirituality across North America. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Bhakti Fest, it's this huge gathering that brings top kirtan stars, sacred music, conscious workshops, and premier yoga teachers together with all the attendees, thousands and thousands of people, for this incredible high vibrational and transformative experience and journey. It's the largest festival of its kind in the United States, and it's just simply awesome. So check it out. Sridhar, how are you? Welcome, and I'm really pleased to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, and I'm looking forward to a wonderful, deep conversation with you. I read about a little bit about what you're doing, and I appreciate your work so much.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been following you for quite a long time, and you know, before we started recording, I just want to let the audience know that Sridhar does these series of interviews with Ram Dass, I believe 9 years worth, and they're just beautiful, beautiful interviews. They're on YouTube. And they're just, we were just talking about that. It's just such a gorgeous, Sridhar's got such a wonderful energy. So I can't wait to get in, and I finally got you on, so I get to ask you some questions now.
Great.
Well, let's talk about meditation, first of all, and how does one bring meditation into everyday life?
Well, it's very important to develop a discipline. We are, as a human beings, and our nature is not to be disciplined. We're just very scattered most of our days and most of our time. And especially now with the technology that poses us such dilemmas every single day with our cell phones and stuff like that, we must take the time for ourselves. If we don't take the time for ourselves, nobody is going to do that, and no one's going to tap you on the shoulder and say, "Oh, Sheldon, you're such a wonderful guy. Here's enlightenment." It doesn't work that way. I can honestly tell you that's not going to happen. But perfecting your own discipline and going deeper into your own sadhana, into your own path, really, really is beneficial. So wake up every morning, start off with 5 minutes of meditation, and go up to 30 minutes or 45, whatever the time allows. Being able to do some yoga as well is very important to start the day off. And the meditation will definitely, you'll see some resounding effects very, very shortly on your peacefulness, on how you handle people throughout the day, and how you're able to just take a step back and not react. The whole problem with us every single day is we react to what others are sending our way. So by tapping into that meditative force and that meditative energy, we have a better chance of not reacting all the time, because the reacting and the subsequent reaction from another person is going to keep us, you know, in that on and on and on in that wheel of recycling every single thing, and we don't need it anymore. So best to spend some time in meditation each and every day, perfecting and developing your own internal process, because that's all you really have. At the end, when we lay down at night and go to sleep, we're by ourselves. And when we end and we're laying on our deathbed, we don't have anybody. We only have the mantra. We only have our internal process. And the more we can develop that now helps us out at that point later on.
Yeah, that loop of reactivity you spoke of, you know, if not for the benefit of humanity in general, it's great to be out of that loop for ourselves, because who wants to be in that? We all know that place of reactivity, of frustration, anxiety, anger, whatever it may be, that reaction might be, and it just doesn't feel good in your own skin. So
yeah.
The place.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say it props up the ego. You know, and
yeah.
we got to get out of this ego propping, because that's what's holding all of us. It's holding us back. The ego is so strong; it just grabs hold of everything. Even it grabs hold to the soul when we're leaving our body at the end of our dance. the ego is grabbing hold of the soul and say, hold on, hold on, I still want you to take me along with you, you know? And that's the time where we don't want anything to take along. We just want the soul to be free.
Now, we better talk about that. First of all, can I have you define what is your definition of ego? And let's get into that a little bit so people understand what you mean when you say ego and perhaps soul as well. Can you make some of the, can you clarify
sure.
the distinctions for us?
Sure. Well, we have what's called a good ego and a negative ego, and we're pretty much controlled by the negative ego. That's how we function every single day. Anything that comes up, the negative ego is going to be attached to that to perpetrate that constant maneuvering, all right? And then when you start to do spiritual work, there is something called the spiritual ego, which is also very delicate. You have to be very careful with that one because it thinks it knows everything. Because you did a little meditation, you do a little yoga, you do some chanting, you do some talking, but that ego is so powerful. It says, okay, I got you now, or I got you now, I got you now. And it keeps on coming up, and it says, all right, here you are again. How are you going to handle me now? You thought you got rid of me, but here I am again. And it's all centered on how we react to everything that comes up. And that's where we go with the good ego or the bad, or what I call the negative ego. It's very, very powerful. It really basically controls our everyday life. Because, you know, when we get up in the morning, the whole day is all about me. I am the producer, the director, the star, and the writer, and the editor of my own movie and my own drama each and every day. And that's what it is. We can't get out of that box. And because the ego keeps holding us to that narrow vision, that narrow point where it feels good, it feels fine. But as soon as you let that go, then the ego stops bothering with you on that level, because you know what the reaction is going to be. You know, okay, this came up before, here we are again, and I have to be very careful on how I react to the situation. I don't want to go down the same road again.
Gotcha. Okay.
So now
thank you for that.
Okay, now we can segue into the soul. So we all feel and understand that the soul is eternal. The soul exists no matter whether the body is intact or not. So we're only temporarily housed in this form, in this body right now, which is, it's just temporary. It's like for 60, 70, 80 years, whatever your time frame is. Then when you leave this body, the soul is eternal. The soul steps out of that body at the time of death, and depending on your karmic predicament or how much karma you have or how well you did in getting rid of the karma or going to your forgiveness side, then the soul is able to not dwell out there in the ethers, in the cosmos, too long. It then takes a rebirth very quickly, especially if you're doing mantra or the people around you at death are doing mantra. So the soul will feel that and will easily transition. I remember when my mother was dying, she didn't know anything about spirituality. In fact, she never called me by my name, Sridhar. She always called me by the name she gave me. And she always hated the fact that I was always spending time in India and hanging out with the gurus. But that was my path. And but when she was dying, and I held her in my arms, and I was doing mantra to help her go through the transition, even though she didn't have any concept or any understanding about the soul. So it doesn't matter if anybody does or not, but if you do, and at that moment, if you can be there to help, that's one of the greatest gifts that you can ever do for anybody, any of your loved ones. So there is an attachment to the soul by the ego, and I call it, as the soul is leaving, traveling out of the body, the ego is sucking on the tit of the soul. Take me with you, take me with you. But, you know, you got to just say, okay, I got enough already. Let me just have a little peace and let me go on to the next round and see what that comes up with.
And we better get into a little bit more about your perception and your experience of what happened then. to give some context here. So in your experience, in your study, and your all your time spent in India and all of that, what is your understanding or truth around what happens after we transition out of the human body?
Right. So we are all about karma. We have all this built up karma from this lifetime, because none of us are saints and none of us are angels, and we've done really nasty things to people, all of us, and we've done a lot of good also, but we've done stuff in our treatment of others, and we haven't gone to that forgiveness state. And that needs to be started with our parents, if they're alive, or our siblings, and all our past relationships. And what I like to do is practice what's called the forgiveness prayer, where I say to you, please forgive me for anything I've done to you in our lifetimes through my words, deeds, and actions that hurt you. And I will forgive you for anything that you've done to me through your words, deeds, and actions that have hurt me. So we have to get to a forgiveness place, because that's the only way we're going to proceed. So based on that forgiveness, we can burn up a lot of the past karma. However, there are all this accumulated karma is from 10, 20, 50 lifetimes previously to us. If you just look at the lifespan of 60 years, let's say, for each individual, well, for sure, I know I've been around 10 times, which was only 600 years. How about 100 times, which would be 6,000 years? So imagine all the accumulated karma that we still have to suffer. And that is the reason why we're still coming back into the life form, into the physical form, in order to still work out that past karma. So until you get to that stage in this lifetime where hopefully you might not return again into the physical body, you just are into that blissful state of nirvana, then that's great, but who knows anything about that place?
Mm-hmm. Okay. By the way, I use that forgiveness prayer too, and the work of forgiveness. Who is the where does that prayer come from? I believe it was from one individual.
That's a Hawaiian. That was the Hawaiian forgiveness prayer. But a very good psychic healer by the name of Howard Wills, he came.
Yes,
up,
that's it.
Yeah, he came up with that a long time ago when I hosted him. I brought him to the mainland in the early 90s, and as you know, we had the Center for Spiritual Studies in Topanga, California, where we hosted all the great saints and teachers from throughout the ages, from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000s. They all came to that place. So we were privy into spending a lot of time with these wonderful beings, and Howard Wills was one of them.
Thank you. Okay, so then that leads me to the question that I get sometimes from my audience and from people I work with, which is, Sheldon, I would, you know, yes, I want to meditate. You know, I just have trouble because my mind is just too active. So what would you say to those people that just have trouble meditating and give up because they just can't, they're just wrestling with this monkey mind?
Correct. And that happens to all of us, no matter how deep you are, because the monkey mind will always come up to test you. But that's why I always advocate the mantra, repetition of a mantra, either on beads or verbally. So you get into a mantra that it's either given to you by a teacher or by a master or by a guru, or if you don't have any of those, which you don't really need, I've always taken the path of the guru-disciple relationship, because I go to India so much, I really, for over 50 years, and I realize for me that is the path that I want to follow. And I've been trained by very, very strict disciplinarian spiritual teachers, gurus, because I don't want to waste too much more time. I'd rather get a stick over the top of my head to tell me, let go of the ego and break it down right now. But of course, we can't be doing that to anybody in this current day and age. So for me, that that works. But utilization of the mantra is very, very important. You get it like a Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, or Om Namah Shivaya, or Guru Om. So many different mantras that are available to people to find. They're all up on the internet. Find one that works for you, And then when you sit down in a quiet space, also on this meditation, you can do it any place. You can be sitting in your office chair and you can just close your eyes and take your 5-minute break and meditate and be quiet. And you'll change gradually. It's a process. As I said, you're not going to be tapped on the shoulder and said, hey, you're a fantastic person, here's enlightenment. That's never going to happen. You can go deeper by the discipline, by the practice. Just keep going. You're going to do it. You're going to make it, and that's what I tell everybody. And you do. It will come back and show you, yeah, here it is. This is your ticket, and it does work.
How about just can we substitute in your experience an affirmation for a mantra? Let's say it's people are out there in the audience like me, don't really gravitate too much to the guru disciple relationship, nor to the East paradigms. Just the language kind of gets in the way, the Sanskrit kind of gets in the way. How about just an I am feeling connected to the divine side, or just some kind of affirmation like that?
Absolutely. Anything that can quiet the mind. You can use the great teacher Krishnamurti. I used to go see him up in Ojai. Fabulous philosopher, wonderful man. And he said you can use the word Coca-Cola. It's just a repetition of the word. It doesn't have to be a mantra. It could be whatever works for you. And yes, the affirmations are very powerful, and I definitely advocate them as well.
Okay.
But it comes down to, Sheldon, is the discipline, is not buying into I can't do something, not buying into I'm weak, not buying into my mind is too active. Because if you're buying into that, then you'll stay there. You will never, ever come out of it. You'll never change. You'll never go deeper because you're just buying into the continuousness of this I call drama. And we don't need to do that anymore. We must effect change in ourselves in order to help others.
That is a really powerful piece you just shared there. So don't enable, it's like don't enable ourselves in our weakness. Enable and empower our strength, our creativity.
Right.
Is that another way of saying that?
Yeah, absolutely, because we're always buying into the weakness. We're always saying, we're always bemoaning our own fate. And when you look at it, we are in such a wonderful place in our lives, all of us, everybody. Just look at now the tragedies in Houston. Every single day there's another situation where people are really stressed out. Of course, they're not going to have time for any mantra because meditation, they're surviving. And so how fortunate are we that we have the ability to be able to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. We're not in survival mode where we're literally having to pack up our gear on our back and wade through waist-high water.
Always keep that in mind, how blessed we are. We are very blessed. So we have to put back something into the universe to help other people through that blessedness. So I always say to everybody, we must do seva, and that's seva, S-E-V-A, it's also a Hindu term. It means service, doing something for other people without looking for anything in return. That's the key, that we must help others without looking for, oh, thank you, Sridhar, you're so nice. No. Nothing. I don't even want you to say anything to me about anything. And even that is a want. It's not even, I'm not looking for a flick of the eye or a flick of the mouth or anything that says, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. I just want to get up and I do, and that's it. And I have enough peace in my mind and settlement in my mind that I don't need to have anybody tell me I'm doing a good job, because if you're doing a good job and you know you're doing a good job and you're in service and you're helping people, then you don't need anybody to tell you that.
Yes, you have an understanding and inner experience of the reward, the inner what that brings us, in my experience. So don't argue for our limitations is one of the big things I heard you share in the last 5 minutes. And it's amazing to think of how often we have done that in the past, right? Argue for our limitations. How often do we do that? I'll speak for myself. Looking back on my life, I can just see how much I used to do that. And then just further strengthen that pattern. So when you're talking about, you know, you run this big, one of the things you do is run Bhakti Fest. So could you talk a little bit about some of the challenges that one faces on the spiritual path in balancing worldly pursuits or money and, you know, just having what we want and living with some...
Thank you. I get that a lot because business / commerce are mm-hmm. two very extremely difficult aspects to maintain together with spirituality. It's very difficult. Granted, we have to get up, we have to pay our bills, we have to be concerned about spending and bringing in amounts to fulfill that spending thing and stuff like that. But we have to be able to separate the two. And at the end of the day, we have to remember it's the higher energy, it's the higher forces of love and compassion that rule the day. And I tell everybody, you could do whatever you want to do. Just get up and do it. Don't ask anybody for permission. You don't need any permission from anybody. You have a thing you want to do. You have a goal. You have a concept. You have an idea. Go up and do it, because there's no difference between success and failure. It's just an emotional feeling in the pit of your stomach, pretty much. Okay? So you succeed? Great. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You fail at something? Great. Thank you, thank you. It's a learning experience. Next, I'll do something else. And that's how it is. I always remember, I started the first natural food store in Southern California in 1970. And in 1972, these two men walked into my store. It was a really great store. Really a natural food store to the extreme. And two men walked in suits, and they said to me, "Oh, we've been looking at your store for a couple of years and following you. We want to give you an opportunity." I said, "Okay, fine. What was that?" They said, "We want to give you the exclusive U.S. distribution to Avion Water, Apollinaris Water, Mountain Valley Water. I mean, six or seven of the most famous waters in the world. We want you to have this distribution. You need to come up with $50,000, and this is what you need to do." So I finished the meeting, and I called my dad up in New York, because I didn't have the $50,000 at that point. I said, "Dad, I need $50,000 because," and I explained everything to him about getting this distribution of these fantastic waters, which nobody knew about at that point. And he says to me, "Who's going to drink water out of a bottle?" And that's the last time I ever asked anybody for anything. Because you're going to get the same answer from them, but they're going to give you their interpretation of something. But you have to go with your interpretation and your understanding and what comes from your heart. Your heart will always tell you what's the good thing and what's not the good thing. And your heart is also what I consider to be the voice behind everything. Anything you're going to do, anything you want to do, you'll hear another voice that's going to chime in and say, "I don't think so," or "Fantastic, go ahead and do it." You know, that's the voice of the good ego and the voice of the negative ego. So that's where that comes into play as well. So what I say is just go out and do whatever you want to do, and don't worry about success or failure. If you succeed, that's fantastic. If you fail, great, I'll get up the next day and do something else.
Okay. Sounds like good advice. Do you have any tools or tips for the audience in integrating any, besides, maybe meditation would be the number one thing, to integrate those inner polarities of either the good or the bad, the ego, positive or negative, or maybe the side of, you know, for a lot of people on the spiritual path, sometimes there's that money story that, oh gosh, maybe money's bad or wrong in some way, or I don't deserve, or whatever it might be. Integrating that, having money and being totally neutral about money without any assigning of right or wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to do something you love. you know, you have to be involved in something you love. Obviously, from your voice and your questions, I see that you love what you're doing. And I admire that in people. I think that's the greatest thing. And I know sometimes we can't do that because we just have to take a regular job and we have to maintain ourselves and that kind of thing. But it's always okay to go out and find something that you really love, because otherwise you're going to be unhappy just doing your regular job, your 9-to-5, going to your office, which I respect and I bow down to, and that's necessary. You can also do that job with love and compassion for your job, for your work, and for your fellow workers. And that will always come out. And you'll see it's an instant path to success. Giving everybody love and compassion, and not be jealous, not be angry, not be mean to each other. You know, you'll see a major change in your life, even if you're doing something that you don't love to do, but do it with love. You know, do it with appreciation that, hey, oh, I'm so blessed I'm healthy, I'm able to go to work every day. Imagine how I would be like millions of people who can't do that, who are not able physically to be able to do that, just here in America. You know, so have compassion, have love and understanding for the less fortunate, and be happy for what you have.
Perfect. Okay. Well, gosh, you're offering all of the audience an opportunity to listen to one of I believe it's one of the interviews that you did with the free gift that you're offering. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and perhaps what's coming next on your radar? And keep in mind that this is airing in about 3 weeks from now. So I believe on the 17th.
Okay. So it'll be airing after our show. So most of the people who are listening to that, I'm sorry you weren't able to make it, or maybe you did, but I really want to invite you all to come next year to the Bhakti Fest and the Shakti Fest. We have two festivals a year. We might have more next year. It depends on how it all flows. But we're not doing these festivals as a money-making project. In fact, at the end, after we take care of all our obligations and our expenses, we do put aside a significant amount of our profits to charity, where we help support around 5 different charities, specifically a 1,500 girls orphanage in India in a small town called Vrindavan, where we adopt the girls and we put them through school and help them get a better education and put them into college. And then they become very productive in the world. And that's really what I think all our lives should be geared to, is working and taking care of other people. I think that is the most gratifying place that we can establish ourselves in our lifetime. You know, how many more cars do you need? Or how many, open up your closet, how many shoes or shirts or pants? Every time I go to India, I come back and I clean out my closet. I give a lot of stuff away because I don't need it, you know. And because what's the big deal? You wear one or two pair of shoes. You don't need 20 pairs. Imagine just taking that money and giving it to some poor people and helping others out. Maybe at the end of the day, going over to a hospice or an old age home. In this country, all the children put their parents into old age homes pretty much because they're too busy. And in some cases, I understand that. But in the old days, and in India and in Europe, the parents raise the children, and then when the children get older, they take care of the folks, and they all live together. I know that could be very difficult in our society, but nevertheless, I would never put my parents into an old age home, and I don't plan on going into one also, because every month when I go to Los Angeles, I visit a dear friend of mine who I grew up with, who was a very famous music producer, and now he's languishing in a wheelchair in an old age home because his kids are wonderful, but they can't take care of him because everybody has busy lives. But he's so lonely there that I take him out for dinner, we go to the park in Santa Monica. We just have a wonderful day, you know, get whatever you want. I go to the health food store, load him up with food, leave him a few dollars so he can order in because the food in these places are awful. Just simple like that, even if you don't know anybody. walk in, bring a little flowers, sit down, talk to the people for a while. You know, just don't even have to do anything else. It's just taking this and helping people to the so that they don't remain so lonely and disenfranchised. It's so sad. We have to do more out to help people. That's really the experience of life. How can I serve you? How can I help you? What can I do to make your life better? And through that process, your life becomes clearer and clearer and clearer and more compassionate. You feel this overwhelming love, and you say, wow, oh my God, I didn't think this was going to be like this, but I feel so wonderful. Not for the giving, but for how it's received. It's all about what you can do and the people's reaction to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember how I got into this work after wanting to do it for probably 10 years, but not really entering into it. I sat down one day and I just came up with a mantra, the petition to myself. I am using my talents and gifts in service to others and living my dream life. That was how I took those two polarities inside of me, the place of wanting to serve, but the other place also that wanted, you know, me, I want some money. I want to live this certain lifestyle. I want to have some freedom. I don't want to be in a cubicle. And just coming back to that statement over and over again inside my consciousness, eventually, you know, the path revealed itself.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I was saying. And, you know, all of a sudden you'll get to a place where you say, okay, I'm already past this part of my life. I don't need to do this anymore. I'm going to step out and try something else. Every job that you have doesn't mean that that's the end of your life. That's where you're going to remain forever. There's so many new ideas coming up every single day, and so many ideas to dive in and do better work for yourself and be more happier. You have to be happy in your everyday life. If you're going to be miserable in your work, you're just going to come home every day and it's going to affect your marriage, it's going to affect your relationship with your children, and it's a cycle that never ends. And how you break that cycle is to do more service work and to do more work for other people in the world. And also to do more work for yourself. To break the cycle, you got to go deep inside yourself. You got to have a discipline. You have to have a practice, meditation, yoga. These are the things that really work, and definitely looking at your diet and changing your diet, because that's significant.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's been a blessing to have you here. Thank you so much for coming on. I got to finally have you on. I really appreciate you. I appreciate your energy, your consciousness, what you bring in your work and your actions into the world.
Well, thank you, Sheldon. I appreciate what you're doing, and everybody has an important aspect to contribute to everything, no matter what it is, you know, whether it's sweeping the floor or managing a big festival. That's why when a festival comes up for me, where people will find me is actually working, doing the festival,
sweeping the floor,
the stuff that I talk about, you know, and not have to, you know, ask too many people for anything.
Well, thanks to everybody for being here. I so appreciate all of you coming together in this virtual community and being part of this wonderful collective, moving forward together in support of one another, sharing love and support. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And please come back again for our next call, our next session, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks, Sridhar, and thank you, everybody.
Okay, thank you so much.